Your Honors. As we begin, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please.
Great.
So, good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Mike Kelly, and I represent Chad Olson in this appeal of his conviction for residential burglary. Mr. Olson comes here today before this court and respectfully asks that this court reverse and dismiss his conviction for residential burglary in the fall of 2012 in King County Superior Court. Specifically, Mr. Olson requests that this court reverse and dismiss that conviction on either of two grounds. First and foremost, Mr. Olson's constitutional rights to due process were violated in the failure to instruct the jury and or to allow argument at a bare minimum to the jury on the abandonment defense to residential burglary, the abandonment defense that is found statutorily as applicable to criminal trespass charges, but which Division III of this court has held applies to burglary cases.
But Division II has not.
That's correct. Division II has not.
And we have not yet weighed in.
That is correct. This court has not yet weighed in. And it is Mr. Olson's opinion that the Division II opinion is the outlier when you read that. We grant it's a limited universe. It's essentially three cases I'm talking about, four if you include the underlying case of Waddell.
Why don't you talk about Waddell?
Well, Your Honor, the importance...
Waddell, it seems to me, addresses only criminal trespass. So how then does that apply to residential burglary?
Well, it applies to burglary cases. In our case, it's residential burglary. The Division III has also applied it to other burglary cases. It applies insofar as Division III extended it by arguing or by asserting the logical presumption that if the abandonment defense to the criminal trespass cases negates an element, and as we all know, the state must prove every element of a charge beyond a reasonable doubt. If the defense of abandonment or the other defense of permission or license were to negate an element required, and then that same element is also present in the requirements to convict under a burglary, then it must necessarily also negate the same element.
Well, what is the element that you're focusing on?
The element is to enter or remain unlawfully in residential burglary. It's a dwelling. Okay.
Well, and here the defense was that he had permission. Either he had permission, that was his main defense, or in the alternative, he didn't enter the dwelling.
Exactly. And this is the problem that Mr. Olson was presented with, either through the violation of his constitutional rights and the failure to give that instruction, and or through his counsel's ineffectiveness in failing to ask for it. His counsel simply relied on...
So was the defense strategy an ineffective assistance argument that you're making?
Yes, it is. It's not necessarily strategy. I want to be clear, because I disagree with the state's briefing on it. It is the lack of investigation. Defense counsel Mr. Gerke merely would have been required to run, to not exaggerate, a 15-minute Westlaw search to at least get into this case law. I think he did propose the defense.
Well, you could have gotten, I mean, you could have found JP and you could have found Harris. And so who's to say which way you should go?
Well, I think the decision, the way you go is you make your pitch. You create a jury instruction, you brief it. In the briefing, that raises a separate obligation, which Mr. Gerke never got to, which is to alert the court to the contrary authority in Jensen. But you make the pitch. And frankly, I think
well,
it's
how
a good
does he
pitch.
How does he argue that he had permission from the owner if he's also arguing that it was abandoned, which would indicate that the owner didn't have the ability anymore to give permission?
So if you look into the facts of the case as been briefed by both sides and in the record, the permission argument, Mr. Gerke was stuck with it because he didn't know that he could have made the abandonment
argument.
Well,
that was consistent with what the defendant had said from the beginning, though, right?
Understood.
I've got permission and I've got this note.
Certainly.
So if he switches gears and now it's the defense's abandonment.
Well,
what position does that put the defendant in?
Switching gears is, for better or for worse, something litigants must do all the time. And when Mr. Gerke
Well, and whether or not to switch gears or whether to stick with it would be a tactical determination, right?
That's correct.
And if what happened at trial was a result of a tactical determination, then it isn't ineffective assistance of counsel. It's just why the Sixth Amendment gives you an attorney to make these kinds of decisions.
And it was, it is our position that it was not a tactical decision because it was made in absolute ignorance of the jurisprudence out of Division III, which we're arguing for adoption by this court, and which I can't, we can't be here arguing directly for adoption. We have to be here arguing through ineffective assistance because Mr. Gerke didn't research it.
Well, you're also making that argument through your insufficiency argument.
That's correct. That's correct. Now, briefly, just to go back to Judge Dwyer's questioning, if reading the record, Mr. Gerke lost, I think for good reasons, his arguments against inclusion of some prior criminal history under 609 and under 404B. That completely, for lack of a better word, tanked his permission and license defense because this defendant had been convicted prior on a similar residential burglary with a similar note in the same notebook that said, that purported to say from the owner, he has permission to be there. When you run across that and you lose that argument to exclude that evidence, going forward on license is not really a great choice. He would have chosen abandonment. That home was clearly abandoned, and there was plenty of record of evidence in the record through testimony of essentially state's witnesses, the homeowner and the deputies that were there. One deputy in particular quoted on the stand, and I'm not going to be verbatim, but said something like it was as if someone had just walked away from it. So the evidence was in there to argue abandonment.
Well, what if he'd abandoned the defense the defendant had proffered? I have permission, and here's my permission slip. Sought abandonment, got, and the judge had made the determination, no, I like Division II better than I like Division III.
Well, then
it isn't a lay-down request, because obviously nothing from here and split authority from the other two, so it's not a certainty he would get that instruction.
That's understood, but again, frankly, we believe Division II is the outlier and is wrong here, and I think Division III's jurisprudence is better. That being said, had that occurred, I would be here today arguing a cleaner, director appeal of a judge's decision as opposed to an ineffective assistance argument.
3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Jennifer Joseph, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, appearing for the State of Washington. We're asking the Court to affirm Chad Olson's conviction for residential burglary and to hold that the statutory defense of abandonment does not apply in burglary prosecutions. I know that you are familiar with the briefs, and I don't want to waste the time by repeating every point that I made there, but I will respond to defense counsel's arguments. First of all, you know, the abandonment defense is a creature of statute. It was created by the legislature and expressly limited by the legislature to the crime of criminal trespass. And you can't read it any other way, so you have to apply it the way it's written. And there's good policy reasons for limiting the defense to criminal trespass. It is true that...
So are you arguing that JP and Ponce are wrongly decided?
Yes, I am. Division 2 has the better analysis there because we have a defense that doesn't exist anywhere but by statute, and the statute itself says to which crimes it will apply. And Waddell doesn't require, and due process doesn't require any alternative outcome here. Waddell was a criminal trespass case that was interpreting the defense statutory defenses to that crime, and all it held was that these defenses are not ones that the defense has to prove, but they negate elements of the crime, and so they're for the state to prove. Nothing in Waddell says that those statutory defenses should be applied to any other crime.
But JP says that abandonment negates the enter or remain unlawfully element, and that's an element that's common in both of these crimes.
That's true. It does that by statute. The legislature.
So how does it? But if it does, whether it does it by statute or it does it by some other way, if it's an assertion that negates an element, why does it only negate the element in the lesser and not negate the same element in the greater?
Well, my first argument is because that's what the legislature intended and expressly provided in the statute. And they haven't changed that in the 5 years since Division II held in Jensen that statutory defense doesn't apply
to
burglary.
But if this was a pure affirmative defense and the defendant had the burden, well, that would be a familiar argument. But when we're talking about something that negates an element, that language indicates that the state has the burden of proving the absence of it beyond a reasonable doubt. And so if it's something that inheres in the element on the lesser, why doesn't it inhere in the element in the greater, even if there isn't a special statutory defense set forth? If it negates an element, it negates an element.
Well, I think that is an argument that someone could take to the legislature, but so far the legislature has not been persuaded by that. And I want to point out that even though the two crimes, criminal trespass and burglary, share that unlawful entry element, they're not similar in any other way. And the legislature has shown us again and again that it takes burglary very seriously, and it intends for it to be punished, even if the constituent crimes are separately punished. And so what we have in criminal trespass is, you know, for the most part, a victimless crime. You can imagine sort of the archetypal situation is, you know, a lost hiker who comes upon a cabin in the woods, and he needs shelter from a storm, so he goes into this cabin. Now, if he doesn't intend any harm and no harm is done by him being there, that's criminal trespass. And it makes perfect sense that the legislature would say, hey, if nobody even owns that property, then nobody has the ability to license or deny license for him to be in there. It's not a crime. We're going to excuse the trespass in that situation. But that's a very different situation from, consider there's a second hiker who comes across this cabin in the woods. And he doesn't just want shelter from the storm, but he's going to beat up anybody who he finds in there, and then he's going to burn the place down. That's a very different situation, and we're not going to...
If he enters with intent to commit some sort of a crime when he gets in, but then he gets in, he finds out the darn place has been abandoned? It sounds like he's had the requisite intent, but the case still would hold, or you're telling me that the statutory defense would hold, that his intent was negated, which doesn't seem to make much sense. He had the intent he had. He just was unable to carry it. He was frustrated because it was abandoned. Well, there was nothing to steal.
Well, abandonment doesn't negate the intent. And, of course, if that was the situation, then the argument would be that the state couldn't prove intent. And just like in this case, the standard instructions that express the state's burden of proving unlawful entry as well as intent to commit a crime therein, those arguments can be made without an instruction. And I'll just shift my focus a little bit to this argument that the court somehow deprived Mr. Olson of due process by failing to give this instruction, which he never asked for. Even the Division III cases of Ponce and JP don't hold that you get an instruction for this. The instructions, which in this case are identical to the ones in Ponce, were held to be sufficient for them to make the argument that they're making. He's not entitled to an instruction, even if he had asked for one, which he did not. And I think that Your Honor has put your finger on it when you said that the defense that he was married to from the get-go when he presented that permission slip to the officers was that he had permission from the owner or the ostensible owner to be in that property and to do what he was doing. That defense had, as unbelievable as it might have been, had some factual support. They put on evidence that this was his business and he did this sort of thing in order to make money. But you can't get away from the evidence that the place was, in fact, not abandoned.
So your position is there was sufficient evidence to establish that the house had not been abandoned?
Absolutely, and especially in this context, in a sufficiency of the evidence argument, Mr. Olson is admitting the truth of all of our evidence. Well, the evidence was that Robert's testimony was that she didn't abandon the property. She considered it hers. She didn't treat it like a home. She wasn't living there, but she treated it as like a storage facility. She kept her things in there. She kept it locked up. Her neighbors didn't think it was abandoned. They knew exactly who to get in touch with when things started going wrong in that property. And several law enforcement officers didn't think it was abandoned. They were making sure to make this a part of their rounds once or twice every shift to make sure that Mrs. Roberts' property wasn't being stolen or damaged.
But she hadn't lived there for years.
She hadn't lived there for years, and I think that illustrates one of the problems with applying this statutory defense of abandonment to burglary. It's not apparent from the outside whether a structure or dwelling is abandoned or not. You know, Webster's definition that it cited in the Division II and Division III cases isn't really helpful for that. To cease or to assert or to exercise an interest, you can't tell that from how run down a property is on the outside.
What about the element that the state has the burden of proving dwelling? Does abandonment come into play in meeting that burden?
I don't believe so, because the definition of dwelling includes anything that's in its ordinary, I believe it's in its ordinary use,
but if
with
the,
for habitation.
But if the house is abandoned, then you would not be able to prove it was a dwelling.
I think you could, because if it's still a house, it still has a bedroom, it still, as we know, had a bed in it, its ordinary use would be to live in, to be a dwelling. But I also want to point out that if the, that logically, if this defense applies to residential burglary, it's also going to apply to second-degree burglary. And that makes unlawful entry with criminal intent illegal if you're entering into a storage facility, a shipping container, and even a fenced field. So I don't know how you could tell by looking at a fenced field whether it was abandoned or not. So consider the, you know, a reasonable person with the intent to commit a crime against a person or property, they won't know which house or which storage facility is one that they can enter without committing burglary and which ones they can't. So you have an application problem, which is another reason, good reason not to expand this defense to the burglary situation. I also wanted to respond to the arguments that counsel was ineffective because he failed to investigate the law. Well, there's absolutely no evidence that he was unaware of the law. He interpreted the law in the same way the prosecutor did, that abandonment is a defense to criminal trespass, which was a lesser-included offense here, but it was not a defense to burglary.
And he asked for an instruction on abandonment for criminal trespass.
And not for burglary, that's correct. And his argument also only mentioned abandonment with respect to the criminal trespass, lesser-included. So my quick version of this is, even if the defense applies, which it doesn't, even if it had been raised here, which it wasn't, and even if the defendant would be entitled to an instruction on the defense, which he is not, even under the Division III cases he relies on, Mr. Olson still loses because the evidence establishes sufficiently that the property in question was not abandoned. We ask the court to affirm.
Thank you. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I have a couple of very brief points to make. I had two. I now have three. If it wasn't clear before, it is our position that it is precisely what Ms. Joseph just argued to the court, which we argue was the ineffectiveness, which was, of course, he just agreed with what the prosecutor's position was. Doing that in absence of actually researching and finding out, there's a pretty good argument out there to be made which opposes that position and helps your client, is ineffective. Additionally, both here in oral argument and in the briefing, the prosecutor has argued that, well, we got the same jury instructions in this case as Mr. Kelly would like to argue you should have gotten out of Ponce. Well, that misreads Ponce. Ponce, first of all, was a license and permission defense, which I think is very important here because it was a license and permission defense. Secondly, the defense lawyer asked for them. He didn't get them, but he did get a jury instructions conference, which highlighted the issue in which the judge made clear that you're going to get a set of instructions that adequately informs the jury of the law, and you're going to be allowed to argue that defense, as to all of, even as to the Berg too, not just as to the crim trespasses. This is bolstered by a specific instruction, definition instruction of enter and remain unlawfully, which you can better use to argue license or permission, because it states that you're there unlawfully without any privileges or permissions and things like that. And that is there as a general definition and not as just a definition to burglary. You don't have such an instruction, and there isn't one anywhere as to abandonment unless you get the specific statutory one for the criminal trespass. So that Ponce is correctly decided, and I think when it comes to abandonment, I think we do need to extend it just a little to say there needs to be something. I think the court could say, raise the issue, have a jury conference, let the court enforce a full packet of instructions that allows argument and instructs the jury. I just think you can't rely only on this general instruction, which was relied on in the permission and license defense. Thirdly, and this was in his closing, the prosecutor exploited this hole that was left open by defense counsel. He addressed abandonment because that was a defense in the criminal trespass, and he all but conceded, well, sure, the house was probably abandoned. You heard all this testimony. It was in terrible shape. It was like somebody walked away from it. Go ahead and think it's abandoned, That doesn't matter as to the main, most serious charge, residential burglary, because there is no defense of abandonment for residential burglary, and it's not in your instructions. That is an exploiting the ineffective assistance that and the constitutional violation for failure to instruct that I've argued here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. Next is State versus Collins.